Well, welcome back to Winning Through Culture. Very excited today to have a very special guest, Coach Sherry Wynn. Before we get started, I want to tell you a little bit about our guest today, because she is an exceptional person that I had the good fortune of meeting just a couple months ago. Sherry is a two-time Olympian. She is a National Basketball Coach of the Year and an Amazon three times best-selling author. She's also a very high in-demand, internationally renowned speaker and frequently speaks up to 14,000 people at a time, including companies such as StubHub, Anytime Fitness, Edward Jones, and Adobe. In 34 years of practicing leadership as a national basketball coach and two-time Olympian, Sherry is an expert at coaching leaders and team members to championship status. And I'm looking forward to talking with you about that today, Sherry. She has successfully taken leaders beyond their levels of comfort to win against competitors who were superior in talent, facilities, and budgets. And her win philosophy and winner principles, inside of those, she shares her secrets to how to succeed even when the odds seem insurmountable, so that your team feels, acts, and conquers their goals like Olympians. So, Sherry, welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here today and to have conversation. I love talking about winning cultures.
Well, you know, that's the title of our podcast. And as I got to know you, like I said, just a little while ago, there may not be a better fit for the topic of our podcast. And so, you know, let's jump in. I really, again, am fascinated with your background and having had a chance to meet you earlier, just love your energy and who you are. And, you know, as a best-selling author who's written and collaborated on, you know, books about mindset and leadership, you know, what role do you see leadership playing in the formation of a healthy culture?
I think it's everything. I mean, everything starts from the leaders, you know, and so that means whatever leader that is, whether that's your leader from, you know, your custodial leader, or whether that's your, you know, your CEO or CFO or COO, whatever that is, everything stems from the leaders. And so what's important is, as a leader, for me, number one is emotional intelligence. And the reason for that is because it's the number one indicator of job performance and the number one indicator of successful leaders. So those people, you know, when you have a high level of self-awareness, you're able to put your ego on the back shelf. And so now you're able to make it about your team, right? The people who are in front of you, how can you help them succeed versus me.
Yeah, it's something I'm a big believer in is self-awareness. When a new leader asks me, you know, where should I focus? It's developing a high level of self-awareness. And obviously IQ is talked about a lot in our culture, but EQ is not as widely understood. Why don't we just take a minute and talk a little bit about emotional intelligence and kind of the formation of that. You want to tackle that, or you want me to?
Oh, I love talking about emotional intelligence. So I think that there's people talk about different prongs, but the way that I see emotional intelligence is number one, self-awareness. So only 15% of the population is self-aware. So that means 85% of the people you're talking to don't ask questions like, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Why did I feel this way? Why did that trigger me? Like they will say things like, I'm an angry person. That's it. Like, done. So self-awareness is number one. And number two is the ability to manage your emotions. Well, if you're not self-aware, you cannot manage your emotions because you don't know where they're coming from. And traditionally, emotions are coming from past experiences. And so the reason we're so triggered by something is usually not the event itself. It is because it's linked to another event. So if you're not aware of that, you're not going to be able to manage your emotions. And the third thing is the ability to manage relationships. So if you can't manage your emotion, you cannot manage a relationship. It's impossible. And in leadership, you know, the conversation is the relationship. So if you can't have, you know, good relationships, you can't have good conversations, you can't have a good business, because business is all about relationships. And the fourth thing that comes into emotional intelligence is really about the ability to be socially aware. So that means that you understand movements like the Me Too movement or all Black, you know, Black Lives Matter movement. You understand that, and you understand why the movement is necessary. You may not agree with all aspects of it, but you understand the gist of it. You understand why people would get upset and why they feel the need to do something. So those are kind of the four pillars that I stand on when I talk about emotional intelligence.
Yeah, it's, I think the impact of emotion is greatly underestimated in leadership. And, those are, I did not realize it was 15% of the population. That's an unfortunately low number. I mean, what are some of the things you've coached people to do to become more emotionally intelligent and starting with the awareness of their self? You know, I think the irony is in some instances, people that are not self-aware might think they are.
Yes. Well, that's part of the irony of that, right? And so they think they are self-aware.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I thought I was self-aware. Like, I didn't know that I wasn't, right? Until you start learning how much you don't know about yourself. And I'm 59. I'm still taking off layers. I'm still getting to realizations. And I'm like, what? Like, I've been living myself for 59 years. I still don't know that about me. So I think that, you know, anybody who's open to it, you're open to the discovery of more about yourself. But with clients, and I'm really interested with clients, is, you know, how do we unravel that? And how do we get them to know themselves? So, you know, during conversations, I ask a lot of questions. But what I love to do, and where I think this is really where it unravels, and I've seen this happen with a lot of my clients, is this, is I send them winning success steps after every conversation. And those dive into deeper, like I ask them questions that really make them think, and they get a lot of information because most of the time people don't ask those questions. So, you know, I'll send them anywhere from, you know, 7 to 11 questions that are deep dives into something that they've said to me. And, you know, and I repeat back to them things that they're saying. So, you know, I had a young gentleman I was working with, and he said, you know, we talked about victims and what a victim is. And a victim is anybody who blames outside events, circumstances, or other people for why they are who they are, right? So if you're a victim, you're avoiding responsibility. What you do is you place blame and you have zero power. And so when somebody uses a victim statement, I will point out the victim statement, right? When they'll say something like, well, you know, it's not my fault. This other person was blah, blah, blah. And I go, okay, so stop. Let's revisit that. What could you have done differently? Well, she's just a blah. Okay, stop. So tell me how you could have responded differently, right? So I'm going to ask them to stop blaming and start taking responsibility. And I just ask a lot of questions, and I want them to come to deeper awarenesses through the questions that I ask so that they can, you know, so they can become better at what they do. I mean, if you're a leader and you're constantly, you know, blaming other people for your failures, you will never evolve as a leader.
Yeah.
No.
That's staying in first gear for sure. If getting out of park. Sherry, you know, you hit on something that I want to touch on as well, because again, you're talking from a coaching perspective, working with people. You know, again, this topic of self-awareness is fascinating to me. I've had the good fortune of working with some great coaches and having some great mentors. So I've been asked some great questions, including actually just an hour and a half ago, talked to one of my mentors that just piercing questions. That, you know, he's in his 70s and I can like count on him. I hadn't talked to him in over a year. I mean, he remembered our last conversation, you know, right before COVID and what was going on. And then, but you know, how important is it to have someone like that in your life that can ask? Because, you know, the capacity if I'm trying to develop my own self-awareness, I might not even have the right questions to ask myself. So where do you see coaching or mentoring or, you know, another person as a part of the equation to helping bring that self-awareness out?
I really believe in, you know, mentors and coaches. I believe that, you know, whether you can hire a coach, which is, I think, as I've discovered all the way that many, many, many people do that to improve, you know, their businesses, to improve their leadership. Or if you have, if you can't afford the coach that you can hire, you know, that you can find mentors is essential, because it's essential for growth. You have to continue to grow yourself. If you're going to be great at anything, you cannot remain stagnant. And one of the things I always think about, you know, I ask people this often when I'm speaking, you know, in my speaking engagements, I'll say, you know, when can you coast when you're riding a bicycle? And people go, well, downhill. I'm like, exactly. So if you're not continually pedaling, right? If you're not continually doing that, you're coasting. And once you coast, you're going downhill. You're not learning. You're actually going in reverse. Like, people are going to pass you by because things change constantly. So it's your ability to grow and learn as an individual and to not forget the things that you've learned. You know, how many times have you forgotten something that you thought was important? And you need to keep that in the forefront of your mind so that value's in front of you. So if you've read something or you've done something and you don't keep practicing it, it disappears. But with a coach, it's always in the present, you know, in front of you for you to remember.
Whether you want to see it or not, they might bring it up. Yeah.
For sure. Like, for sure. Who wants to, you know, and that's the hardest thing about being coached is that you have to look, you have to be willing to say, no, that's a fair statement, or that's an interesting statement, or I need to look into that more. You can't go, no, that's not me. Then you might as well not be a coach.
Well, and that, I think, gets back to self-awareness. So, you know, emotional intelligence, you know, self-awareness, hugely important attributes from a leadership perspective. And again, kind of, you know, leadership is everything when it comes to the formation of a healthy culture. What are some of the other attributes you've seen in leaders that create a healthy culture? And then conversely, quite frankly, we'll start there, but then, you know, the attributes that show up in a more toxic environment.
Well, you know, what I think great leaders do is they're great listeners. I really believe that. I think that when you find a great leader, they ask questions, they listen, they show you value. They help you find the answer rather than giving you the answer. They empower the people around them. So great leaders really, again, put their ego in the backseat. They ask, you know, I want to hear what you have to say about this. Walk me through your process. Help me understand, you know, how you came to this conclusion. Those kind of things. I want to hear your viewpoint on it. That's interesting. Tell me more about that. Like, they have this arsenal of ways to listen and to, you know, get more information from their folks and to empower them. Because when people feel heard, they feel valued, right? And so a great leader helps their people feel valued. And when you can feel valued, people are going to be more motivated, right? And that comes back into when people are highly motivated, they're more likely to be higher in productivity, engagement, right? And when they're engaged and they're motivated, they're more likely to be retained. It all comes back into that package. And so some of the people I've talked to, you know, again and again and again will say, the hardest thing I had to learn as a leader was to shut up and listen.
Use the two ears versus the one mouth.
Yep. That's hard, isn't it?
It can be very difficult. Yes. Especially for type A personalities that think they have all the answers, and maybe they do, but or think they need to have all.
And it's not about you, right? That's the thing that a leader has to understand. It's not about you.
Yeah.
I had this wonderful assistant basketball coach once, and you know, in a game, I'd get really emotional and get a little bit crazy. And she would just come up to me and she'd go into my ear. She'd go, "This is not about you." Then she'd turn around, sit down. That's all she'd say. "This is not about you." And I go, "Oh, dang, it's not. Like, it's not. It's about these young people on the floor. It's about helping them grow as individuals. It's about giving them the best opportunity. It's not about me."
Yeah.
And it was such a wonderful message, you know, and just whispered in my ear and then sit down. And she knew she'd done her job.
Yep. Now that's a great statement. So on a not so healthy culture, I mean, what are some of the attributes that show up? Obviously, we've talked about ego and how that can, and obviously not listening.
Well, I mean, toxicity comes from dysfunctional people, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're allowing dysfunctional people to be in your organization or to run pieces of your organization, it will fail. So, you know, dysfunctional people show up in a lot of different ways. That means that they may not share with others. I mean, it's like being in kindergarten again, right? You need to share with other people. You need to be able to listen and value them. You need to not pull off this, like, I know best and shut up thing. You've got to respect all different people. You have to have that idea that, you know, when you're toxic, people oftentimes need to be right. And so they will fight to the nth degree to be right, even when they're wrong. Yep. And so those kind of people, they won't listen. They won't examine who they are. They are toxic in so many different ways. It can be the naysayer, right? The negative person that won't work, never work. It could be the person who's the antagonist, who's like the button pusher, you know, button bushing, It can be the handholder, which is often the person who doesn't do their own work and always brings it back to somebody, right? So they're pushing away their work and always saying, I don't know how to do this, da, da, da. The handholder. It can be the person who, you know, is blameless. Not my fault, it's somebody else's fault. So there's a lot of ways it can show up. But if you have dysfunctional people, they can create toxicity. They need to change or they need to go.
Yeah, and I think that gets back to self-awareness, because the dysfunctional, I mean, we all at some level have a dysfunctionality we're dealing with in our life. And in the absence of the self-awareness about that and a plan to attack it or deal with it, it shows up in very interesting ways once you're a leader, for sure.
Right. Well, those people who are overly critical, right? Mm-hmm. They're overly critical or condemning to others. The people who are, one of my favorites is the people who just stonewallers. So there's nothing that, no information can come in, because they are like, they're good at pushing it off. They're good at not listening. They're good at putting it back to you. So there's all kinds of toxic people that, you know, and this is the number one thing, you know, in talking to the coaches that I work with, they want to know how they can, you know, what can I do to help this person along, right? How can I help them, you know, see inside themselves, and how can I coach them so that they become better people, and by through being better people, they can become better, you know, leaders or employees.
Yeah. So let's shift gears, because you've got an Olympic athlete background. You've been a coach at collegiate level, and I think, and I say this on the surface, the obvious thing is in winning a medal in the Olympics is the objective. And winning a championship in basketball is the objective. And I say on the surface, because I know in talking to you previously and just a comment you made earlier, that it's about the players on the court. So how, I'm curious, you know, bringing the athletic, you know, objective of winning into a business setting, Sherry, recognizing that, you know, winning can mean different things to different people. Obviously in sport, there's a very clear, very clear outcome, yep, that's a win or a loss. You know, where does winning and how does winning fit into, you know, the development of a healthy culture?
Well, I think first of all, you know, winning is winning through your values. So I think you have to discover what your values are. Mm-hmm. And those values should be something that, you know, are so precious to you and every team member. So the values should be, you know, discussed as a team, decided upon as a team. They should be always, you know, they should be written on your walls, on your, you know, on your memos, on your, you know, on your emails. They should have a little line on your emails. It'd be something that on your meeting agenda is brought up again, because, you know, if you're winning without values, you're really not winning, because at some point there becomes this, you know, idea of cheating. And that's not going to be a winning culture, because you'll always get caught. It may not take, it may take 10 years, it may take 20 years, whatever, but you'll get caught in cheating. So you have to decide, what does winning look like for us? And what are our values and our missions, so that we're very clear on those things and we're all in the same direction. So if we're all in the same direction and our values are the same and we love to work together, we found the way to work together, we're going to find the magic, you know, the magic formula to get to the win, which is, you know, what are our goals? What's our strategy? What are we looking to do this year? What are we going to do next year? And doing that within your values. So you're never disowning those values or your mission, right, for the win.
Yeah, that's an important part, because our culture obviously puts a high value on winning. And certainly in business, winning is achieving certain results. But I think in the cultural perspective, doing it out of alignment with a set of stated core values can create some very interesting outcomes down the road that, again, in a worldly sense may be winning, but in a humanistic sense may not create such great wins in the people.
Well, yeah, when you lose your integrity, right? When you lose your integrity, you're always going to lose the respect of your people. Yeah. Always, right? I mean, it's not about, you know, and I just talked to one of my coaching members of the day, and they were very confused about the difference between, you know, being needed and being valued. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a leader, you should be on You should be beyond the need to be needed, right? You should be in the place that you want to be valued. And so valued is different. Value is, you know, that you have your integrity in place, that you live, you say what you mean and you live those words, that people feel like when they come to you, they're going to get a fair listen, you know, and a fair opportunity to move forward or whatever. So really living in that space is so critical, because if you're going to have a winning culture, you can't have a culture that's based on deception. It will never work.
Yeah, no, it'll fall apart at some point. Just a question of when, not if. So, you know, you work with a lot of leaders, you know, you've written about leadership. I mean, what have been some of the brilliant breakthroughs you've seen helping leaders create their culture?
Well, you know, there's so many examples I can give you about leaders and really, you know, I had a CEO that came to me as a credit union, and she said, look, I've been the president CEO of the credit union for 4 years, and I've never gotten to any of our goals that I set for the credit union. So we had to set her out, like, what, you know, what is going on? What's happening? Let's dive into that. Let's discover what's going on there. And so one of the things about that was, in her culture, she had created a culture where she was the rescuer. So, you know, she was always jumping out of her role to help everybody else, which made them say, well, you know, if she'll do it, then let's just give work to her. And so she had to, yeah, which is common, right? It's a very common thing. And it was retraining herself, you know, to be able to say to people, so walk me through the steps you tried. Mm-hmm. Help me understand, like, we're going to start with a winning culture, which is, you know, we're about finding solutions and not finding problems here. We're going to be solution oriented. So if somebody came up to her, she would say, well, what's a possible solution that you have? Well, I came to you. Okay, I understand you came here. We're going to be solution oriented, which means you need to be solution oriented. Walk me through the steps that you've tried to this point. So by, you know, changing that whole mindset of the entire culture where everybody was starting to learn to be empowered and to find their own solutions rather than running into the CEO every time. And she goes, I get pushback. I said, of course you do. Of course you're going to get pushback.
You taught everybody your problems.
Right. Well, now people are having to learn to work. It's scary. Yeah. So, you know, so it's really about coming in and discovering what, you know, do you have your culture set? And is, you know, culture is not a one-time thing. It's an everyday thing. So people have to understand, well, you know, we talked about culture once. Oh no, like once is not good enough. It's an everyday thing. You do it all the time. And you show it all the time. Like you live it all the time. So, you know, it's deciding on what your true values are. Like some of my favorite values are, we're going to be solution oriented, right? So if you bring me a problem, you have to bring a solution. Another one is focus on controllable factors. So if you come to me, I'm going to ask you, what are your controllable factors? And if you say to me something like, well, when Jennifer, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't care about Jennifer. I want to know what your controllable factors are. So you're empowering your people to be at their best through your culture. And so your culture should be about empowerment and growing your people, giving them the best opportunities. And if you're not doing that, then your culture is going to fail.
Yeah. You talk about solutions oriented. I remember I was 30 years old and I had actually been self-employed for a few years, and I went into a corporate role and I had a boss who I respected immensely. He was a very, you know, smart guy, a little intimidating, quite frankly, at 30. And I remember going into his office and I had a problem, and he was sitting at his desk and he said, what can I help you with? And I told him I had a problem, and he looked up at me and he said, you can come back to my office when you have three solutions, and don't ever come in here again with a problem without three solutions. So I will never forget that.
Right.
And he taught me well. And the irony is when I learned to go to him with the solutions, most of the time I had come up with at least 80% of a solution that he might add a couple of his life experiences or business wisdom to come to the right place. But I think that's a great reminder for all leaders, that if you're not asking your people to bring solutions to you, you end up in a role where you carry quite the burden.
Right. And you want your people to grow, because Here's the thing. And I learned this when I was a college basketball coach. I thought I was there to literally coach basketball. Like, that's what I thought I was doing. And I wasn't. I was there to coach people. And so when I understood that, and that's the same as any business, right? You have to understand it's about the people. It's about people. It's, you know, whether it's your customers, your clients, your team members, whatever, it's about people. So you can never let that out of the loop. But when I discovered that a lot of dysfunctional people were coming to play for me, and they couldn't help it. They were 18. What do you know at 18?
Yep.
Right. And so we knew that if we could teach them to be better people, so if we could give them some tools that they didn't have, you know, for example, you know, the lack of the ability to resolve conflicts, like a lot of people do not know how to resolve conflicts. So we worked at giving them the tools that they needed so that they could resolve conflicts on their own. And we didn't spend all of our time in the drama. And what we discovered, even these young ladies, I mean, imagine they're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, still really young. And they were able to learn how to do this. And they would say to me, "Hey, coach, we had a conflict last night. It's okay. We sat down. We talked about it. We're through it. We just wanted to let you know we got it handled." I'm like, perfect. And so instead of having all the little drama that often drives in the office, you have little pockets of drama. When people learn how to resolve conflicts, they can have the conversation that they need to have, right? And so you are eliminating some of that nasty undercurrent that can draw a culture. They can suck a culture down, right, into a pit of, you know, just darkness and depression. So it's really important that you grow your people.
Yeah. So I'm curious about that. I was going to ask you this, looking at your college coaching experience. I mean, you went into some programs that were not at the top of their game, so to speak, and you turn them around. So how did teaching those life skills show up on court? Mm-hmm. And then how did that translate to the winning records that you produced in those programs?
You know, it's interesting, but I think one of the things it did is give them confidence. Mm-hmm. Because when you have the tool set to do something, you know, like when you have the tool set, so a lot of people just don't have great tool sets, right? They don't know how to have the conversation. They don't know how to go to somebody and say, "Listen, I just want to talk to you. I'm struggling with some of the things that I'm feeling. I want to know if I'm off, you know, way off base here. Please help me understand." Like, they just don't know how to have those conversations. And so when you give people tool sets of things to do, like when you tell them, you know, the difference between, you know, taking responsibility, 100% responsibility, or being the victim of the victor, what does that look like? What does that give you when the victor and the victim? So when you give them tools, they'll actually use them. And when they use the tools, they become so much more confident, and it just shows up on the court. It shows up on how they treat their teammates. It shows up on how they feel like, you know, if they hear something the other team is doing and they're like, "Oh my gosh, they're not getting along. They don't know how to talk to each other." That gives them another step up, another confidence level. So I think that when you grow people, you grow their confidence. And as their confidence grows, it's going to show up in all different ways, whether it's in the, you know, when it's in an office or they're in their leadership or they're trying to, you know, you want them to double their productivity or come up with a new idea or be creative. You can't do that without confidence.
So in essence, the focus of growing them as people before a player makes them a better player.
Mm-hmm. Or just like your people in your office. Yeah, I mean, I would say any office.
In business.
Right? You want to think about, well, whether you grow your people in technology or you grow your people in, you know, marketing or whatever you're doing, it's like you're giving them the opportunity to evolve all the time, so that they have confidence in what they're doing. Because, you know, there's a big difference between theory, the theory that you learn in, in a book, that's called knowledge, and then the wisdom of experience. So wisdom can only come through experience. Knowledge can come through a book, but oftentimes when wisdom meets knowledge, wisdom just travels all over knowledge, right? So you have to provide the opportunity for wisdom and that growth.
Yeah. You know, the other side of winning is failure. And I've always said when I'm speaking to groups that, you know, failure's been the better teacher of than over success, at least for mm-hmm. me. I mean, what role do you see failure playing in growing a healthy culture?
Well, I think you have to allow people to fail, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's important. And it's why, you know, a lot of kids today, they have the rescuers, they have people who are like, you know, "Oh, honey, it's not a failure, and here's your trophy," you know, but what I'm saying is, you have to let people fail. And then you say to them, no, all right, you failed. Let's go. Next step. What are you going to do next? So we're, it's not that you failed, it's how fast you recover from the failure. So you talk about recovery. You know, what's the gap between here's failure and here's the next step you take? How long is that gap? Because what's most important is not the failure. What's most important is the shortness of the gap between failure and recovery. So you want to have a person who learns to fail fast. I mean, people use that term, fail fast. Fail fast and get to the next step quickly, right? And so failure is not, you know, and you have to define what failure is. Like, it's, to me, you know, I define success as three things. And I've gone by this definition in a long time. And number one, so a win is this. You give 100, you give your best effort. Like, you give your best effort no matter what. And that's going to look different on different days. So your best effort on a sick day is going to be different than a best effort when you feel good. Your best effort when, you know, one of your family members is sick or ill is going to be different than another day. But you're going to always give your best effort continually. Number two, did you never quit no matter how tough it was? So no matter how tough the challenge was, were you consistently moving forward? And number three, did you learn something from the experience? So when I would go to new programs, I'd say, you know, I don't believe in losing. Everybody go, oh, well, you're going to lose some games. I'm like, oh, no. Let me tell you what winning is. Because I think if you keep focused on that definition of what winning is, you're going to get to successes. And that allows you to get through the failures, right? So a failure is just based on, look, did I learn something? Did I grow from this? Okay, not a failure. Did I continue to try no matter how tough it was? Yes, I did. Right? Did I give it my best effort? Yes, I did. Well, what that does for you is it means that you're able to jump from one failure to the next one faster. And you're able not to feel bad about yourself, because what happens to people is they feel bad about themselves. And then that puts them in a position where they cannot look for the solution because they're too busy beating up on themselves.
Yeah, I think it was Winston Churchill that said, he said, success is moving from one failure to the next without losing your enthusiasm.
And, yep. You know, I love that quote.
Yeah. So obviously we've talked a lot about communication and good leaders being good communicators. I mean, what advice do you have for leaders that are looking to up their communication game to really, you know, get better in that area?
Well, you know what? I think the most important thing is you have to learn not to take things personally. Here's what happens to people is when you get triggered by somebody else and you get reactive, you've lost all control of the situation. So one of the biggest things that I see when people fail in conversations is they react rather than respond. And one of the acronyms I use to teach people is QTIP, Q-T-I-P, quit taking it personally, because it's not about you. When people are speaking to you, it's never about you. It's always about who they are, their experience, their history, because people can only speak from that which they know. They cannot speak from places they don't know. And so many people have not read books. So many people have not done the self-awareness, as we've talked about already. So many people are kind of lost. And so when they come to you and they start their pushing buttons and they start accusing you of whatever they're going to say, they might cuss at you, they might call you names, whatever. To be a great communicator, you have to let that go and stand there ready to have the conversation and lead them back into a better place, no matter what, how hard they pushed against you. You know, that gives you, you know, because it's assertive communication. It gives you the hand up on any conversation when you do not react and you live in that responsive mode. Because in everything coming out of your mouth, you have control over, you thought about it. It's got a direction to go, you know, a complete direction to go to. And I think that's the number one thing. And that could take, for some people, that could take a long time to get to be able to do that.
I think it's a great piece of wisdom in the sense that, you know, when you do get triggered, when you do react, you completely lose control and you completely get off. I mean, you can't listen, you know, your hormones are in a fight or flight mode.
Right.
And you're ultimately really, you're going to end up in probably a battle of wills, if not words.
Absolutely. And then you've lost, you know, then the other person's not going to respect you because you walked into their trap. Yep. And so now they know they can trap you and they're going to be, you know, putting out these little mini traps all over the place for you. But yeah. It's a lot harder when you don't play their game, right? When you're staying strong. And that's part of knowing your, you know, what your values are. It's part of knowing, again, that, you know, you're beyond what they're doing. That, and it's not to belittle them or look at them as less than. It's just understanding that, you know, in their journey, they have not yet come to this realization.
Yeah.
Right. They just haven't come there yet. So if you can show them that great way of being above the fray and not being in it, then, you know, they're going to learn from you. And I think the greatest thing about being a leader is that when you're a leader, that you're constantly showing people a better way to be, and then they can take that home to their families, mm-hmm. and then they can take it into their communities. And so it's that whole thing about paying it forward and how that effect, that ripple effect, can literally become hundreds
of people,
you know, from a single leader.
Yeah. That's a huge ripple effect. And I think, again, speaking to you earlier about your coaching experience and some of the people that touched base with you many years after they played for you, to hear the stories is a real testament to how many lives could get impacted by that. So, you were quoted as saying everybody changes, but not everybody progresses. So can you elaborate, Sherry, on the fact that a change is inevitable in spite of what people would hope for otherwise, and how you work with leaders to get past that comfort zone, again, to build a healthier culture for themselves and their teams?
Well, you're right, because we're all going to change. I mean, we can't, you know, I don't wear the same clothes I even wore 5 years ago. I wish I did. Like, I wish I did. Trust me, I wish I did. I don't. I mean, so there, things are going to change whether we want them to or not, you know? And so when you're looking at life, you got to think about, am I going to progress with, you know, the changes that are occurring, or am I going to fight the changes? And a lot of people, you know, try to fight the changes. Change is inevitable. That is going to happen. I mean, think about all the progressions that have happened, you know, technology. I mean, it's crazy. And so the great companies don't go, oh no, like we're going to stand with our thing that we did 20 years ago because it was really good. They're constantly saying, what are we going to do next? Because everybody else is going to be, you know, constantly progressing. Yeah. So, you know, you have to realize that, how am I going to progress into a better person? And that really comes back and circles back to the coaching, to the mentoring, to reading, you know, all those folks that I have interviewed over the time. And, you know, almost all of them at some point will say, you know, they're either a reader of books, or they attend masterminds, or they have a mentor, they have a coach, they're constantly learning, they're growing, they have habits that they do every morning to do that, because they're progressing in, you know, because they're constantly learning. And so as change comes, they're moving with the change rather than pushing against it. And so the companies that survived COVID, and not just survive, but thrive, they immediately said, all right, what do we have to do differently? How, you know, what are we going to do to right now transform our company into a place that we're going to thrive in this current situation? So those are the people who are looking for, again, goes back to looking for solutions, right? They're like, we're going to progress. We're looking immediately. We're not going to be mad about it. We're not going to be angry about it. We're not going to throw pity parties about it. We're going to move forward.
I read a great book years ago, Sherry. It was the title was, It's Not the Big That Eat the Small. It's the Fast That Eat the Slow. And it was about, I love your concept of progressing, because again, the word growth, and I use it all the time, it's one of the core values of our organization. But there's a visualization to progressing. You know, growth can have different connotations to people relative to what does that look like, but progressing, at least to me, is, am I getting better every day, and am I adapting to the circumstances in the environment around me, and ultimately am I becoming more impactful as a result of what I'm consuming, whether it's relationships, learning, knowledge, wisdom. So I like that word, progressing.
Oh yeah, me too. Well, it's a different, like you said, like there's certain words that have a huge difference in them, whether that's wisdom and knowledge, growth, progression, you know. And so only people who have been reflecting about it and thinking about it understand that subtle thing is really a lot larger than we could ever imagine.
Yeah, a lot of great advice today. Any advice you'd have for, again, entrepreneurs, leaders, business owners, as they look to win beyond what we've talked about, but any advice that kind of bring ourselves to a conclusion here today, which I could talk to you for a long time. I always try and keep the podcast digestible for a run or a drive.
So. Oh, well, there you go. Perfect. Yeah, well, if I was to run, it'd be like three steps. So there you go. It wouldn't last very long. No, I just really think that leaders have to examine themselves. And one of the ways to do that is to have your team members evaluate you, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't get mad at them. You can't get vengeful. It's just like, you know, is this true? Like, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, is this true? And if you're like, yeah, that's probably true. If you, every year, from the very first year I coached, I let my players evaluate me. And, you know, initially it was kind of hard to take. I'm like, anything that's hard to take is probably the thing that you need to work on, because the harder you resist against something, it's probably the more truth there is in it.
Yeah.
You know, but I let them evaluate me, and then I sat down with each one of them and we had a conversation. And I would say, tell me more about this. You know, how do you see this? Why does this upset you? Is there a better way? And sometimes I'd say, I can see what you're thinking. Let me explain why I do it this way. Mm-hmm. Right. So sometimes I didn't agree with them, but I'd say, let me explain why I do it this way so that maybe you can understand better why I choose to do it that way. And other things I'd be like, ooh, I need to change that. Like, I got 8 people off a 12 person team saying, Coach Wynn needs to change this. I'm like, ooh, better pay attention to that.
Yeah.
So I think that really allowing other people to evaluate you and understand that when people take the time to do that, it's a gift. It's not criticism, it's a gift. And being able to, you know, look at yourself and say, do I need to change that? Or is a good reason for me to remain steady in what I'm doing?
Yeah, I had another mentor of mine years ago gave me the adage that feedback is a gift. So you can choose to return the gift or receive it. And I love your statement, because I do think it's true, and it's hard for a lot of people, again, if there's a lack of self-awareness. But the harder it is to hear, the closer it is to the core of something you need to pay attention to. And certainly if you've got a wide audience of people giving you the same feedback, in spite of what you think about yourself or see in yourself, it's probably a blind spot that needs attention. So,
absolutely. Like you said, if it's resistant and you're pushing against it, that's the thing that you need to pay most attention to.
Yeah. No, that's great counsel. Well, Coach Sherry, it's been wonderful to be with you today. I really, really enjoyed our time today, and the time that we had, I guess, last month now, or maybe even April. The year's getting by again. If people want to learn a little bit more about you, maybe go to your website, thewinningleadershipcompany.com. Is that a good place to
Absolutely. Learn? Absolutely. So there's, you know, so if you're looking for a speaker for an event, you know, if whether it's motivational, I do a lot of motivational, so inspirational, motivational talks. Or if you're looking for something on leadership, you can find me at thewinningleadershipcompany.com. I always offer this, and this is really funny because I offer this all the time and people never take me up on it, so I won't offer it again. Because I always think there's a gig, like there's something to this because she's trying to get something from us. And here's what it is. Like, I have a book called Unleash the Winner Within You, a success game plan for business, leadership, and life. And so anybody who listens to this, if you want a free, yes, it's free. Okay, wait, no, it's not. You have to rant and rave about me forever. So if you get the free book, and I'm saying postage and everything, you have to rant and rave about me to your kids, your grandkids, your dogs, your organizations, associations, everybody, free of charge.
Wow, that's a very generous offer. And I will take you up on that. So
see, that's funny, because the people like you, the people who host the podcast, will do it. But the people in the audience are like, there's a gimmick. She's trying to get something from me. No, not really. Like, I just want to give.
Well,
that's what I want to do. I want to give.
I was going to say, after spending, you know, 30 minutes here, if people don't get the essence of who you are and the fact that you're a giver and you're all about helping people become a better version of themselves, then that's their loss. But that's a generous offer, and appreciate it very much. Well, it was great having everybody with us here at another episode of Winning Through Culture. Again, Coach Sherry Wynn, our guest today. thewinningleadershipcompany.com. We will talk to you soon.
I've enjoyed spending time with you on this episode today, and be sure to continue along this winning journey with me. Thank you for listening to the Winning Through Culture podcast, and remember, stay impactful and relevant. To connect with us, you can find us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Winning Through Culture, and find us online at winningthroughculture.com, or just go to the show notes where you'll find all the links. We look forward to connecting with you and hearing from you. Thanks for listening.